All right. Welcome. We are so glad you're here. Wasn't this morning great? Wow. I'm an old guy and that really touched me kind of thing. So we've got the front row hecklers here. So you're from the press? He's from the press. He's the encourager. He's the encourager, and these guys are whatever. Like, hey, my name is Bob Shelton. I'm the city missionary from Calgary, Alberta, and it is just an honor to be with you. We had a great time in our breakout yesterday. These guys did an amazing job. I know you're going to be blessed by what they share, and I'm thankful that you guys have discipleship on your mind and heart, and how do we do that in a simple and reproducible way? You know, sometimes Vance Pittman, who you heard from this morning, or yesterday as well, but Vance, when we were in Atlanta a couple weeks ago, he said, you know, sometimes when we think about starting a church, he says we start a church, we make disciples, and we reach a city. But he said, that's just backwards. He said, what we have to begin with is we have to begin with asking God to help us reach the city, and then we make disciples, and then we start a church. And so that's really, I mean, when Jesus said, what's the final report card going to be? Where are the disciples? Where are the disciples? And so this conversation around discipleship is so critical. And what these guys have to share, what I really appreciated what they shared yesterday was they're all practitioners. They're all doing it. They're doing it in different ways. They're not pastoring huge, big churches. They're just pastoring normative-sized churches, but they all have on their heart, how do we disciple and how do we raise up disciples to who will follow Jesus? And so Kelly Reed is a pastor of Tapestry Church, and he's my pastor. I've had the privilege of watching him grow, and he's become just a great pastor, a great leader, but he also leads the Aspen Church Planting Network, and he can tell you more about that and how they disciple leaders in their network and how they disciple make disciples in that network and how they start churches. Kelly is married to Brooke, and they're just doing a great job. I think you've been there 8 years now as the pastor, as the lead pastor, and so, again, appreciate that. Jason McGibbon, he's a pastor of Hamilton Fellowship, but he's a very creative dude. He paints, he sings, and his claim to fame is he has a daughter who's a great actress. And so JD, is that what you call her? TJ, yeah, I'm really good friends with her, but TJ is the name. Yeah, but TJ is really great. And then Neil Manzano pastors Filipino International Baptist Church and in Edmonton, and you're from Toronto. We got Edmonton, Calgary, and Toronto here, so we've got quite a mix. Been there 10 years, did you? 12 years. Has a heart for multiplication of leaders and churches, and you're going to really want to hear what he has to say. And so, again, I'm going to leave Kelly to do more introductions if he needs it, but basically, this panel is just going to share with you how they are sort of figuring out how do we do multiplication of disciples and leaders and churches. So let's pray, and then I'll turn it over to them. Thank you, Lord. Thank you for this time we get to share together. Lord, do something in us and through us. Help us to be healthy leaders so that we can raise up healthy churches. And Lord, we believe that happens through just making of disciples and sharing our life on life with people. So would you help us to have ears to hear what you want to say to us today, and help us to pause and listen to what your Spirit is prompting us to do. Pray that these would be spiritual marker days where we put down a spiritual marker and say, you know, God did something in my life that week that made a difference, that caused the way that I view my whole ministry going forward is different. And so, Holy Spirit, you have freedom to reorient us to your will and to your plan today. And I commit this time to you in Christ's name. Amen. All right, come on up.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks, guys, for coming and hanging with us for the next hour, or I guess a little bit less than an hour now. I am starting my timer, so we'll try to do better this time around. So like Bob said, my name is Kelly. Some of you guys know me, some many of you don't. I do pastor Tapestry Church and lead Aspen Network. I had the privilege of leading our panel discussion again today. I think we had a great time, hey guys, yesterday, sharing a little bit what God's doing. And so I want to share a little bit about what we're doing. Our title here says Simple and Reproducible, Planting Churches That Reproduce and Multiply. And that really is kind of at the heart of all the stuff that we want to do. We want things to be simple. We want it to be reproducible. But we also kind of have another title. And that other title is we want to create a culture of multiplication. And the way that we're going to structure our conversation and the way that we look at this, at least at Tapestry and within the Aspen Network, is we want to start by multiplying disciples, then leaders, and then churches. I'm going to say this next thing over and over again today, and so you guys are going to hopefully get it. We don't graduate from multiplying disciples. We don't move on from multiplying disciples or even leaders once we get to churches. We keep on multiplying disciples and leaders. And so the way that we're going to structure our time is I'm going to have some questions for our panel in these kind of three categories, a couple questions in each of them. At the end of each of these sections, we're going to have some interactive questions. And so what we're going to do is there'll be a question on the board that I'll ask you guys. You guys are going to get into groups of three or four, and I want you to discuss that within your group. You're going to have 3 to 4 minutes to do that, so you have to be concise and succinct so everybody gets an opportunity to share. I will hound you when it's time for us to come back, but you guys, yesterday's group did it flawlessly, and I have no doubt that you guys will do it well as well. At the end of our time, we're going to have some questions. Well, about 8 to 10 minutes is what we're aiming for you guys to ask questions. The way that we're going to do that, instead of passing the mic out to you guys to answer questions, is we have the phone number here. We're just going to get you to text me those questions. And so this screen's not going to be up there the entire time, so why don't you take just a few seconds, jot that down on your notepad, plug it into your phone, do whatever you have to do. And you can ask a question anytime during the thing. My phone's on silent. It's not going to disturb any of us. But at the end, I'll be able to kind of look through some of those questions and be able to ask our panel with their astute wisdom and experience to be able to answer those and answer them well, which I'm sure they'll do. But that's kind of what we're going to do today. Sound good?
Yeah.
Great. Exactly. Neil's going to get the hard ones this time because I gave it to Jason last time. We're going to start with multiplying disciples. And so my first question is to you, Jason. As we think about church planting and as we think about mission, why is discipleship, where we're starting, why is discipleship so important to multiplication and church planting?
Yeah, I think it's the heart of church planting. And the short answer is because when Jesus gave the Great Commission, it was go make disciples. So on the one hand, the shortest answer is just obedience. If we're going to do what Jesus said, it's to go and make disciples. But then, of course, he's Jesus. So there's just practical wisdom in that. And I think that when we start with it's the foundational building block. So if you start with disciples, then you're going to get to the point of needing the other things, right? But if we're discipling people and they're going and learning how to be disciples and make disciples, then you start gathering. Well, then you're at the point where you need some leadership development because there's something to lead. And then as you start to look beyond that and say, we need to continue the mission, then we need to plant churches. But discipleship is both the means to get there, but it's the way of equipping. It's the way of raising up the people to go. And so I think it really is the heartbeat of all of the other stuff that we talk about. And when you short circuit discipleship, I think that's when we run into problems. Things stall out, or we see people sent before they're ready, or we see them sent and their character's not quite up to their competency. All of those kind of things happen, I think, when we short circuit the discipleship piece in our planting.
Yeah, no, that's a good word. We're a bunch of send guys and gals, right? Like, we're here because of Send Network. How many of you guys have been through assessment? Just raise a hand. How many of you guys have helped with assessment? Most of us in this room have experienced assessment, either as an assessor. I was assessed as a church planner 16 years ago. Me and Bo, before they did anything. Bob made a joke yesterday. The way we assessed for church planting 16 plus years ago was they checked your pulse and then they threw you out there, right, Bo? And so we have assessment now. And one of the questions that we as assessors will ask church planners is, do you have a discipleship strategy? What does it look like in your church? What will you propose to the core group? And so as a follow-up to you, Jason, how does the church go about developing a discipleship strategy?
Yeah, I think when I look at the Great Commission, look at Jesus, I think the first thing is to try to draw some principles out. And I think that's probably the most important part is to go, what did Jesus do and how did he do that? What are the principles that we can apply? And then I think when we go to apply it or develop our own strategy specifically, there's some freedom in that. I think it depends on context and your culture and who you're reaching, all of those kind of things. But, you know, looking at, I think the core principles is, you know, that we kind of, at our church, kind of took and have tried to apply is when Jesus did it, it was relational. So no matter how we're doing discipleship,
in our whole strategy, there has to be at least one part of it that is super relational, life on life, right? That's the incarnation, Jesus coming down, Jesus calling people to himself, come follow me. So that they, if it doesn't have that, that's a huge missing part, because that's where young disciples get to see someone who's more mature living it out, and they get to mimic what they see. And then it's an opportunity for those who are discipling to see and help somebody to put it into practice. And if you don't have the life on life part, you're not going to get there, have those opportunities. And then comes the other things, like there is information. Jesus preached the Sermon on the Mount. He gave parables. So there's things that he's teaching. Transformation, though, is the ultimate goal of that information. So again, that relational part is, without that, you can't assess the transition, you know, the transformational part. And then the reproducible, right? The Great Commission is teach them to obey everything I've commanded, which would include the Great Commission, so that it becomes a sort of closed loop thing. So then to take those principles and then apply it, you know, there's lots of different ways. The simplest part is to say, who do I have right now that need, what do they need? And then be thinking ahead. So what's next? And what's next? And what's next? And so whatever framework you take, something like stages that says, you know, like I'm going to start with someone who's curious and a believer, you know, all those working up to disciple maker. Or for us at our church, we took a different approach and just said Jesus tended to hang out with three guys really closely. He hung out with 12 and really worked with those guys. And then there was the crowd of disciples. So we've said, how do we organize our people into threes and little cohorts? And how do we do life groups as our 12? And then the Sunday morning is still a part of that. Like sermons are still a part of that, but larger gathering, but it all fits together for a system of discipleship. So we hope to see people in different opportunities for them to be growing.
Hope you guys caught that. Like, it's reproducible. Think about this for a second. Like, Christianity is what, some 2000 years old. Obviously, discipleship has been reproducible. We can give most of the credit to the Lord because we know that we're broken. We couldn't sustain this. But at the same time, we've seen discipleship persist for some 2,000 years. And even going back to your relational thing, just this idea, we talk about a tapestry. Like, the degree to which we're in relationship is the degree to which we can actually do discipleship together. If we know each other as acquaintances, we can might rub off on each other a little bit here and there. But the more intimate that we know each other, the higher the degree that we can disciple one another. And going back to what I think we heard this morning, in our couples and we're married, that's why it's such a profound place for us to rub off on one another. And so I love those kind of paradigms things. And I want to take a second and share an example of what a discipleship strategy looks like at Tapestry, just to give you guys one more example before we get to our interactive question. So we kind of borrowed from Paul Johnson, stages. You guys know what stages are, maybe. It's that idea that there's someone who's curious, a believer, a disciple, and a disciple maker, or a maturing disciple, and you kind of have different grids that you're following. For a Tapestry, we decided to create four primary categories that we as leaders look at within our church to say, are our disciples taking steps towards maturity? And our first one is called gospel fluency. Some of you guys might know that from a book by Jeff Vanderstilt. Everything that I have, I've just borrowed from somebody else. And so I want you guys to have permission that you can borrow as well. But gospel fluency is our first one on that grid. At the beginning, at the seeker and the new believer stage, they don't necessarily know how the gospel actually impacts their lives. We say fluency because it's like learning a language. Anybody learn a different language, more than one language? Several of us in this room have studied other languages. Maybe English isn't even your first language. But when you're first learning, you're having to translate everything verbatim, right? And so you're hearing a word, you hear that word in the other language, you translate it into your native tongue, and then you think about the answer, you come up with the answer, and then you have to translate the answer in your head to that next language, and then you deliver it, hopefully somewhat coherently, so that they can understand. Like, that's the process at the beginning, right? Well, that's what it's like also for a new believer, someone who's new to Christianity with the gospel. They don't know it fluently yet. They're still having to go through that longer process, which is why they need more support. But as they become more and more mature, right, they can grasp the intricacies of the gospel a little bit more fluently. We never arrive perfectly, right, guys? But hopefully we learn that we can kind of assess what's going on and use the gospel as a filter the more we become a disciple maker. That's the first one. The second one is gospel community. So we want to assess, how do our disciples live within community? At the early stages, they don't even necessarily know that they need Christian community, that we're inviting them into it. Maybe they're thirsty and hungry for community in general, but they don't know they need Christian community, brothers and sisters around them. So we're inviting them into that. eventually you kind of move to the point where you're thirsting for community and Christian community. You want to be there. We all like those people in our churches that want to be there, right? But then as you become a disciple maker, it's not just that you're happy to be there, but you're looking around the room and you're going, how can I catalyze community? So Bo here, he just loves Dungeons and Dragons. I know this. I don't think it's true. But Jason loves Dungeons and Dragons. And so as a catalyst for community, if I knew these things about these two guys, hypothetically, I would say, hey, Bo, you need to get to know Jason. And that would be a catalyst for community. So that's the second one. The third one for us at the Tapestry is gospel nourishment. And this is kind of maybe where we get back to the fundamentals of discipleship and spiritual disciplines. But at the beginning, a new believer doesn't know how to take the word of God and understand it super well. Now, the Lord can work through it and has worked through it, certainly, but they need to be fed. They need someone to walk alongside them and provide spiritual sustenance from the word and teach them how to look at it. The more you become a disciple maker, from our vantage point as leaders, it becomes evident that they can not only be, they're not only being fed, but they can feed others. And the last one is gospel movement. And again, like I said, I borrow everything from everybody else. This is a Henry Blackaby one. Henry Blackaby said that we should, with the Holy Spirit, pay attention to where he's at work and what? Join him. And so gospel movement for us is at the new believer stage. It's someone that's just beginning to be oriented to the fact that God's actually at work, that God is doing something in our midst. And for them, it's usually kind of, I remember for me when I was 18, it's like eye-opening. But they're just learning. When you get all the way to the disciple maker level for us, the Tapestry and the discipleship strategy, now not only do you recognize that God's at work, but you're doing what Henry Blackaby taught us to do, which is you're saying, okay, God's at work. Now I'm going to join him in that. Does that make sense? And so at Tapestry, that's how we kind of frame discipleship in our strategy. And so let's get to an interactive question for you guys. You've heard enough from us at this point. What I want to ask you guys is get in your groups of three. And I want you guys, in 60 seconds or less individually, to answer the question, what is your discipleship strategy? So get in those groups. I'm going to call you back in about 3 or 4 minutes. Talk to one another and share your discipleship strategy. And 3, 2, 1. All right. And now we're turning around. We're going to get continue these conversations. You guys are just getting louder to talk over me. You guys know that, right? Like, you guys are literally getting louder. So the talk over me. You know what makes me really happy is that you guys clearly love each other, want to hang out with each other. I don't want to be the one that's like ruining the vibe, but we have some other questions and other important things for us to get to. So you guys can keep talking afterwards. We're going to jump into multiplying leaders. Again, I'm going to reiterate this because I said I would. We don't graduate from multiplying disciples. We don't stop making disciples just because now we're developing leaders or now we're planting churches. We keep on doing the thing that we're called to do, which is go and make disciples. But we do want to talk about multiplying leaders because it is important. So when my kids were younger, I have 3 kids, 11, 9, and 6. But when my girls were a little bit younger and Declan was kind of coming along and Brooke told us on Christmas morning that she was pregnant and we told the girls thereafter, one of the questions that kind of comes up is, where do babies come from, right? And it's kind of a tricky question to answer to a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old because you're not going to get fully into it. And at the same time, I'm not happy to saying they come from storks or whatever the myth is that we live in. But as a pastor, now as a multiplying pastor, a question that I also get asked often is not where do babies come from, but where do leaders come from? And it's the same thing. Stork doesn't work. Saying it comes from a stork is not a valid answer. And so today we're going to get that valid answer from Neil. Neil, where do leaders come from?
Not from the stork. Well, I believe that leaders should come from inside the local church, within our own churches. And it's coming from the culture of discipleship. So from our discipleship, there may be some people there that God's going to call or gifted into leadership, particularly church planting and church planting teams. And maybe even right now, if you're looking for 1 to 2 years of maybe planting a church, you may have some leaders already in your church that God is calling, and you get just to discover them and find out how to develop this particular person or a group of people, and then deploy them, release them. if you're looking for 5 to 10 years from now, there may be some emerging leaders in your church that you need to discover. You need to look at them, find out where are these people. And some of the clues are they are already leading. Maybe they don't have the position of leadership, but they are talking to people. They are encouraging people. They are doing some signs of a leader, right? So if you're looking for 10, 15 years from now, you'll be looking into your Sunday school and youth group. There must be some children there, young people that God might be putting this desire to ministry and leadership, particularly church planting. And so just like what we're talk about, if there's a culture of discipleship in our church, one of the signs that we can see third and fourth generations of them, right? So you disciple, and then your disciple make disciple, and then they make disciples. The same way with leadership development, there is a culture of leadership development in our church if we can see third and fourth generations of those leaders. You know, the person that you develop as a leader also develop someone, and that develop others as well. We know that that's going to happen when your method is simple, because anything that's simple is reproducible, right? And so if your method is complicated, they cannot reproduce it, and we cannot multiply leaders. We cannot even multiply disciples. So the simple it is, I'm not saying that we should be simplistic, but simple and reproducible means we're trying to multiply disciples and multiply leaders. So I believe leaders should come from our own churches, not outside of our church. Of course, we would like to welcome those, but if we would like to see multiplication of leaders, we need to see those who are already leading, those who are emerging leaders, and still 10 years from now, those who might be our leaders.
That is really good. I remember yesterday you were sharing that sometimes we look for those emerging leaders. We have to what?
Right.
He used this analogy of shaking the tree. Sometimes that's what it looks like, right? We had to shake the tree for the low-hanging fruit, but then we also have to develop as well. And so those are a really good thing. And then I don't want you guys to miss this, that idea of third and fourth generation. Like because what we're talking about today is creating a multiplying culture. We'll know we have a multiplying culture when, like Neil said, we start to see third and fourth generation disciples, third and fourth generation leaders, and also churches, which we'll get to just a little bit, won't we, Neil? I remember when I first kind of began on my leadership journey, I was young, I was wet behind the ears, is an English idiom that we use sometimes about being kind of green and not knowing anything really. And men like Bob and others that were around me gave me opportunities to practice, to try, to learn, to fail. And I didn't even grow up in the church. I didn't become a Christian until I was almost done high school. But as I look back over my discipleship and my leadership development in my younger 20s, you know, I had some really faithful, stalwart guys, but to some degree, it was kind of haphazard and kind of all over the place, the discipleship and the leadership development. Not that it wasn't there, it just wasn't overly systematic. And so as I began to think through this, and as our panel began to discuss about multiplying leaders, we realized that sometimes there's this battle going on between kind of the organic development and like systematic development, those that are intuitive and those that are systematic. And so this is kind of a hard question, but I'm going to give it to Jason because he's very astute. What is the right balance between organic and systematic leadership development, and how do we navigate that balance?
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I was sharing, anybody ever did that science experiment or help your kids with it where you take a piece of celery and you put it in the water with food coloring, and then you watch over time as the celery sucks up the water and it's like changes color? No, nobody's done that one?
You should try.
Oh, it's really cool. So go home, take a piece of celery, and you cut the bottom off and stick it in a glass of water and then put in some food coloring. And over the days, the celery will change color because it's sucking up the water, right? And I realized in that, or like celery is not all that complicated an organism or whatever you want to call it, like a vegetable. It's not complicated, but it has internal systems and structures, right? It has some things that it needs to do in order to live and survive and then reproduce. And so it has some. So no matter how organic we want to be, it's okay to say, I want to be organic, but I have some simple structures and systems about how we're going to reproduce. And if we don't have them, I don't think we'll ever get there. And but I love what Nia was saying. I have made two mistakes on this one in my current church even. The first is that we started by doing just house churches for a number of years before we ever launched a Sunday service, and then we transitioned those house churches into life groups. And I always wanted those house churches to multiply. I was like, we're going to do house churches, we'll multiply them. If we ever get to a Sunday, we'll get to it or whatever. And then when it just felt time to start the Sunday service, we did that, and I had always struggled to multiply the house churches. We started a Sunday service, we started calling those house churches life groups, and then all of a sudden people were like, oh yeah, I can lead one of those. And I'm like, well, what's the difference? I'm asking you to do the exact same thing. And it's because it didn't have the word church in it. So they didn't hear church, so they didn't think, oh my gosh, you're asking me to be a pastor and be solely responsible for the spiritual development of this whole thing. I'm not a pastor, I've never been to seminary. We just called it a life group, and all of a sudden they're off and running, right? So I think we can overly complicate it. And it wasn't even overly complicated. They just thought it was more complicated than what I was asking. But on overly complicated can be bring paralysis, I think. So it needs to be reflect your context and culture. It needs to be as simple as possible. But on the flip side, I also know sometimes, like you were saying, your discipleship was a little bit haphazard and stuff like that. I think sometimes those of us who love discipleship and do it are fairly intuitive at doing it, and so we can just make it up as we go, and we have the time of our lives, and we see people grow. But when it comes time for them to feel like they've been equipped to walk somebody else through it, just your average congregation member, if they don't have something more concrete that you can put in their hands and say, just do this, you watched me do it, now just do it, here you can follow this, if we don't have that, they oftentimes, again, it causes paralysis because they never feel equipped enough or ready enough to be a teacher. But if you just say, hey, make a disciple and here's something you can do to make it. And so I think there's that balance between not being too complicated, not being organized enough. And just, I think it's really helpful for us to think, what would it take for the average congregation member to do? For me, it was really helpful to say, what would it take for my kids to feel equipped to go and do this? And when I started thinking about my kids who were just entering into their teens, really, when I did it, that changed everything, you know? And so I often tested it on them. And that would be like, if they can do it, all right, we might be onto something. So,
no, that's incredible. I had an opportunity to take my kids to the Calgary Climbing Center. It's this big warehouse of a place with climbing walls and bouldering, and they got the kids section. And as I've begun to think about this now, after hearing Jason share this two times now, feel like it's climbing one of those walls. You got to have enough handholds on the wall for someone to actually scale the wall, right? But at the same time, you don't want to put too many to make it like it doesn't work as well. I guess my illustration begins to fail there. But you want to have the right number of handholds and footholds to actually let somebody get to the top of it.
Yeah, but if you said you got to build a staircase to get up there,
oh, it's true.
They'd be like, no, what, I'm out. What, I can't
exactly.
build a staircase.
No, certainly can't
I
can do
grab those handholds. Yeah, that's a totally great analogy, I think.
Thanks.
To encourage you, man.
And thanks for
right
redeeming
on,
that.
You're right on, yeah, right on with that.
Jason, you're an encourager. Thanks, brother. Interactive question. This is for you guys. It's actually two. First question that I wanted to ask, based on what Neil and Jason were sharing, is I want you guys to kind of look into your context. You're a church planter, maybe you're a pastor, maybe you're at a Sunday church. I'm not sure where you're at. But where are you seeing third or fourth generation multiplication right now? And what's the next step for you to get there if maybe you're not? Now, it's totally fine if you're only at first and second generation, because that's where you have to start to get to third and fourth generation, right? You can't just automatically get there. You got to start investing now. But I want you guys to examine kind of where you're at and identify, do you have some third or fourth generation things happening? And if not, how do we begin to make those steps? That's two questions, but that's the first part. The second is, what are your greenhouses? And you're going, what's a greenhouse? I love Jerry Tyone. He loves planting and gardening. I'm sure he uses greenhouses. But in a greenhouse, it's an opportunity. It's a place to kind of allow the plants to grow in a protected place, in a place that provides the right amount of humidity and all these things. I had that when I was an early church planter. I had it at Tapestry Church, which I now get to pastor, where Bob and others provided space for me to preach. And so now, even for us at Tapestry, some 16 years later, we're still inviting other younger guys to come up and use the pulpit as we train them as a place of a greenhouse. And so that's kind of what a greenhouse means. So where are you seeing third and fourth generation multiplication, and what are your current greenhouses? So you guys have 4 minutes. Go. 3, 2, 1. Start talking louder to talk over me now. Go. Get louder. You got to talk over me because I'm going to keep talking. You guys are doing great. Thanks, guys.
Bring it in. Bring it in. Come on.
Bob, I'm not sure if you would agree with this, but I think yesterday we had all the firstborn rule followers in our group because they like, the minute I said, these, you guys are like the secondborn and thirdborns. You guys make your own rules. I get it. That's fine. Totally fine. We are in a transition. If you don't get the joke, come talk to me afterwards. Because it's usually funnier when someone explains the joke to you, right? But multiplying churches is what we're going to talk about next. We've talked about disciples, which we're not stopping doing. We're not graduating from it. We're going to keep doing it. We're also multiplying leaders. And now we're finally going to get to talk about multiplying churches. My first question is going to be to Neil. And Neil, you've been around the CNBC for a while, right? We had this vision up until 2020 at the CNBC that we wanted to see 1,000 churches across Canada in the CNBC by 2020. Now, we didn't quite hit 1,000. We still dream of multiplying and still dream of seeing that 1,000 churches across our country. But as we look towards the future and planting more churches, Neil, how can normative-sized churches, and by that, I kind of mean 50 to 150 people. That's probably a normative-sized church for Canada, for us. So how can a normative-sized church, a church like yours or like mine, that falls into probably the lower threshold of that range, how can normative-sized churches effectively multiply themselves, and what does it mean to be simple and reproducible as a normative-sized church?
Thanks, Kelly. Our church is a 120-member church, so it's a normative church. I would like to answer that with two answers. One is, what do you mean by simple? We're talking about simple discipleship and leadership development, and then same way with church planting. So what I mean is that what we're doing is the mother-daughter church planting, or we call that churches planting churches. So it's simple because any healthy normative church, 50 to 150, can reproduce. That's what the SEND Network is telling us, that every local church can be a reproducing church. And so we see this happen in our church, where we were able to, by God's grace, to reproduce 2 other churches in the last 4 years, 2015 and then 2019. And then our first daughter church, they're averaging 50 to 60. They were able to reproduce a daughter church in 2020. That's during the pandemic. So it's simple because a local church, healthy local church, can do it. It's also simple because the church planter and the church planting team must be coming from that local church. You know, so it is built on the discipleship culture and then leadership development culture. And so they some of them will be called into church planting, or one of them will become a church planter. So it's simple because our belief is, or our philosophy is, it's bivocational or co-vocational. And so the budget is not that big, you know. So finances is not that really a problem. And you just need small space to launch a small church, right? Just like what Jason is doing, and because you're doing it already in your culture, it can be reproduced by sending off a small number of members with the church planter. So the last 2 church plants we had in 2015, we were able to send off around 30 members with Pastor Bayani. He is here yesterday. And then in 2019, we were able to send off 20 of our members with our church planter. So, and then hopefully this September, we'll be sending another church planter, and we are gathering again 20 members with him. So this is so simple that any healthy congregation can do to multiply churches. Reproducible because it's not complicated, you know, it's the issue there. But I believe it starts with conviction. A conviction, of course, for the glory of God. The reason we're doing church planting is not for the glory of our name, but it's for the glory of God. I think that's so, for me, it's really the first conviction that I should have as a church planter or as sending church pastor to challenge our congregation that we're doing this for God's glory. A second conviction is that we must have that willingness to sacrifice. You know, so 120 member church sending off 50 members is a sacrifice. Especially, some of them probably are key leaders in the church, in your church, right? Like Bob mentioned yesterday, the church in Antioch, they sent off Paul and Barnabas. Key leaders in their church, and they're willing to sacrifice that. Our tendency is to retain these people and help you in your ministry. But I think it's a conviction that I'm willing to release them for the glory of God and for multiplying churches. And just like what we have talked about the culture of discipleship and leadership development, we would like also to see third and fourth generation church planting, you know. So when a mother church reproduces a daughter church, we call that reproduction. And then when the daughter church reproduces another church, we call that multiplication, right? So we know that our church is multiplying when we can see third and fourth generation church planting, right? And then in our convention, if we have 400 churches, that's a lot of possibility to multiply when we can see third and fourth generations of those church plants. So it is simple and it's reproducible because any healthy congregation can do it.
Thanks, Neil. One of the things I love about the third and fourth generation is it does give you kind of a benchmark, but I want to encourage you guys too, because you might not be there. Maybe you're here because you want to get to that third and fourth generation. But like I said earlier with discipleship and leadership, you got to start at first and second, and then you develop beyond that, right? So kind of following that vein, I'm going to ask and then answer a question, which I have the purview of doing as the leader of this panel, is what does it mean to be an effective sending church after your church has been planted? And so Neil's kind of already begun to figure this out. You actually have a granddaughter church. Is that correct, Neil? And so we want to plant churches. Maybe you're a church planter, or you're involved in church planting. You eventually want to get to the point where you're also planting a church, is my guess. Maybe you're already kind of moving towards that. So the question that I think that we've begun to answer at Tapestry, our Aspen Network began with this dream of planting 5 churches over 5 years. That was in September 2017. And today we do have 5 churches under Tapestry, plus we've adopted another church, Urban Grace, and they've got a church plant. And we're beginning to develop those third and fourth generation guys now that in the next couple years we'll see the fruit of. But the question is, how do we become that effective sending church? If you go through assessment, one of the criteria to get that yellow or green light is that you have to have a sending church. So what does it mean to be a sending church? How can you be effective? Because we're also running a little bit low on time as we were yesterday, I'm just going to leave you with an illustration. And I hope that this is something you kind of hang your hat on. Feel free to come chat with me afterwards about some of the stuff that we're doing. I'd be happy to share. But it used to be, and I think to some degree it still is, that we see being a sending church is an awful lot like putting somebody in a boat, maybe a team of people in a boat, and pushing the boat off into the middle of the lake by themselves, into the middle of the ocean by themselves. Instead of that illustration being how you perceive being a sending church, I would like for you to start thinking of it more as train tracks. And what you're doing is you're running on train tracks as a church, and when you become a sending church, all that you're doing is creating another parallel track next to your track that's going to run alongside with you, okay? So instead of a boat being pushed out into the middle of the ocean to fend for themselves, maybe you have a line attached and you can provide some care and some sustenance. Imagine trains running parallel together on 2 sets of tracks, different trains, but running together. That's kind of what I want you guys to begin to picture as what it means to be an effective sending church. We have about 4 minutes left. And I don't think I got a single question from you guys. Do you guys have any questions? I mean, it's mid-afternoon. It's nap time. I get it. It's fine. That's why me and Dan have coffees. We're trying to push through that nap. But we do have a question. Can we get the mic? We got to record our questions here. What's your question, sir?
Yes, my name is Jean Safonet. Thank you very much for your presentation. Also, I would like to know, does a church planter have to wait for his church to attend at least 50 members to start the to start plant multiplying?
Okay, yeah. So we're kind of asking a quantitative question here. We're asking, do we have to hit a certain threshold? Do we have to hit 50 people for us to get to a point for us to plant? I'm going to give this to Neil. Neil's going to answer this question. Right, Neil? Go for it.
Sure. I believe there's no ideal number, but I believe that a healthy church can reproduce, right? Even in any other organic thing, that a healthy organic can reproduce. So I think there's no magic number, but in our experience, our first daughter church in was averaging 50 to 60. They were able to plant another church after 4 years. I believe that even a church can reach 200. If they're not ready, then they will not reproduce.
Yeah, Jason, why don't you talk about your, like, the house churches you were trying to do? They want 50 whenever you were wanting to multiply them. I mean, it depends on the type of church you're wanting to grow, right? Is that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a good point. It's what are you trying to reproduce? So you want them to probably have seen what you want to reproduce, but you know, we were doing much simpler model of church. And so a house church was what, I mean, we did have one that grew up to like 40 people at one point. That was a little ridiculous, but really my heart was like at 11. And that's what we do with our life groups. But like a part of that answer is, what do you mean by church planting? If you're waiting till you're 50 to start the idea of church planting, then that's too long. I would say you need to start, multiplication has to be a part of the culture. And so you don't necessarily have to wait for a certain amount of people, but if you're training people, they need to have made a disciple. Then I think they need to have gathered a group and discipled a small group and then multiplied that small group. And if they get to that point, then it's worth talking about, hey, when do you go off? But I think if they've hit those character markers that you're looking for, and they've hit those competencies of working from making one disciple to a group of disciples, multiplying, if they've walked through those steps in a microcosm little way, then I think that's when you know that you're ready. That if they can gather people and do discipleship, then I would say that's probably, you know, it's different markers necessarily than just people.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Yep. So when you look at the CNBC churches all over Canada, there is a portion of the thing on there where it lists the culture of the church.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Anglo, you have this, you have that, you have that.
Sure.
But the demographic is changing so much where you find that another generation. So is there something that could cause... this is a question. Have you seen situations where the culture of a church could also determine that health, not taken for granted, you need health as a foundation. You could have a healthy church, but because of the culture of the church, it is taking a longer time for the church to now begin to reproduce itself. For example, if you have a church of 100 people and there's 30 Hispanics, there's 40 Anglophones. I mean, real, and they know who they are.
Okay, yeah.
But not the children. These are people who know, I'm Italian, I'm Greek, you are Hispanic. But they fellowship together because they focus on Jesus. Could that delay the planting? I don't know if you've had that kind of experience. Mm. Could that delay the mother? Because I see that happening in the future of the CNBC. Because as our children grow up, you're going to see churches where you have all of these who come from. Does that make any sense to you? Is this something you might find? We're trying to have a network.
Right.
And we have two churches in our own region that have... You come into the church, you can't tell what ethnicity is because it's very... My church is that way, and there's another church like that, a NAM certified planter whose church is going in that direction, and there's a third church now who has become that way. So, and they're not planting yet. Could that be the reason? Because they're trying to, first of all, amalgamate three or four different types of culture. Sorry.
No, I mean, that's a really good question, and it might actually be a panel into itself. And so... I'm going to do the diplomatic thing and pass it to Bob. I would love to chat with you afterwards, but...
I think, Pastor Andaza, I think what you're hitting on is what I think Jason and Kelly were sort of getting. I think from the very beginning, it has to be in the heart of the pastor or planter that he wants to reproduce. We don't have a timetable on that, but like if he will just listen to God and say, am I making disciples? Am I making leaders? Then I think we'll trust the Holy Spirit to tell us the when. Whenever we start churches in Calgary, one of the things we talk to all of our church planters is, we don't want you to come here to plant a church. That's not your primary task. Your primary task to coming here is to reach a city. We want you to plant churches that will help us to reach a city. Do you see the difference there? Like, we want people to have a kingdom mindset whenever they're talking to us, okay? So real quickly, we've just got a few minutes left. Give me one big idea. What's one thing that you heard that you think, you know, I'm going to take that home and I'm going to think about that whenever I get there. Give me what's one big idea? Pardon? Relationship. Discipleship is all about relationship. That's a great beginning point, isn't it? Like, so many times as pastors, we want to begin with information. We think discipleship is about telling them stuff. People don't want to care how much you know until you show them how much you care, right? And so, yeah. What else? What's one? Family. Yeah, family. Yeah. Developing this multiplication culture. Yeah, yeah. What else? Pardon? Grooming leaders in the local church. Yeah.
Creating more greenhouse spaces.
I love that concept. I love that greenhouse thing. Like, that's a really good thing that I think.
Sharing.
Pardon?
Sharing.
Health. Yeah. And health. And I think the whole idea of that you don't have to do this alone. Like, I think if you want to have a multiplication culture, like, learn from one another. Like, Bo and Kelly, like, they both lead networks in our city. They learn from each other. They're growing together. They talk about how we strengthen our networks and all those different kinds of things. And so, again, for us, we wanted to begin to develop this idea of collaboration within our city. So those things, what will you do? What's one thing that you will do? What's one thing that you'd like to do whenever you go home? This is where the rubber meets the road. Plant a church, yeah. Come on. That works for me. That works for me.
We have disciples, now we have to plant.
Yeah. So let me just ask you this, because I just think we are so good in the church about talking about stuff that we never really do. Do you have a clear discipleship strategy? When somebody comes into your church, maybe they're a seeker, maybe their marriage has just fallen apart, maybe they're struggling financially, but they come into your church, do you have a clear path for them to say, coming from that seeker, how am I going to build a relationship and share the information so that they can get transformed, so that they can feed others? Do you have a path? That I want you to struggle with that, because I think whenever I was a pastor and whenever I was a planter, I think I struggled. I don't think I did that well. I'm more this intuitive guy that, you know, just hang out with me and you'll catch it. But that was hard to reproduce for me. And so I guess I want you to think about that, about this whole idea of discipleship. I love the whole idea of Kelly, this whole idea of gospel fluency and all that kind of stuff. Learning to speak the language. Here's one of the things that I love about what Pastor Neil says, and I hope you can get this into the DNA of your leadership. I think a lot of times as leaders, as pastors, or planters especially, we tend to overestimate what we can do in a year and underestimate what we can do in 10. You know what I mean? Like, we want to do it right now. But what's Neil telling us to do? He's saying, take the long look. Who's the guy that you can begin to develop now who may not become a planter until 5 years from now or 10 years from now? Do you know when Sidney Crosby was first identified as going to be an NHL player? When he was 10 years old. Can you look in your Sunday school classes and in your church and look at 10-year-old, 12-year-old and say, you know, there's something that God is doing in that young man's life, that young woman's life, that God could use for his kingdom. So yeah, so be looking for that next generation. Do you know, I'm a great grandpa. Did you know that? How do you become a great grandpa? Well, you get married young and you have kids young. Your son gets married young and he has kids young. And his daughter gets married young and she has kids young. This coming Sunday, we're going to have a baby dedication for William Robert McNeil, my great-grandson. Do you have, as you think about your church, do you have a daughter church that is getting ready to have a baby? And then what about whenever that young one grows up and they have a baby? I'll leave you with this thought. Jesus said these words. He said, if you want to find yourself, what do you got to do? You got to give yourself away. I believe what's true for us as individuals is true for us as churches. If you want to find yourself as a church, you've got to learn to give yourself. Don't protect your resources. Don't protect your leaders. Don't protect your people. Figure out how, God, how do you want me to give myself away and our church away for your kingdom and for our city? Lord, bless you guys. Thank you for being here. You're dismissed. Yeah.